Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blankers. I'm Branham. He's Brian. It is the Killer Bees on a Monday. Happy Labor Day. Appreciate all those that labor. Kind of like us. You know, this is some hard work, man. Blood, sweat, tears. You go home sore each and every day. But we do it for you. We put on
for you. I'm a dog.
And in honor of Labor Day, to pay homage to Labor Day, those that have labored to build our great country, we're going to labor. We're going to labor today. So glad you're with us. Lots to get to today. We are. It is game week, by the way. Happy NFL game week to all of those who celebrate.
Don't touch this.
Football's so great. Like, I'm sitting there, I'm happy we played Thursday selfishly, because Saturday I did nothing but watch football, draft football, and dream about football. And it's going to get even better this week, because there's NFL this week. All starts on Thursday, too. We got a good Thursday matchup. Should be a lot of fun. But we'll talk some NFL, of course, because it is game week. Game week is finally here. Lots to get to today, as you know. We'll recap the college football weekend. Lots happening over college football this past weekend. That was a lot of fun, and we'll discuss that, of course. But first, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Astros wrapping up a four-game series against Anaheim. We'll react to the game once it goes final. But good, bad, and ugly, as we do each and every week. The Astros lost the series up to this point. So we'll start with the bad and the ugly and get to some of the good, because there was a little good. What bad and ugly do you have, Blankers? What takes it away for you?
I mean, bad and ugly starts and ends with the offense. The offense was brutal. You know, they did get some hits Friday night, but overall, to just get absolutely shut down Saturday and Sunday and just struggle mightily, even just to put a base hit on the board, was not timely, because of the fact that, you know, you had a chance to gain ground on Seattle, and at one point it looked like you were going to, and then you just crapped the bed offensively.
713-780-3776. One word to describe the Astros offense the last three games.
Pathetic.
Pathetic. I asked my my friends on Twitter to describe it, and there a lot of what they said weren't we can't repeat it on the air, because they were a little vocal about it. Anemic, maybe? I think that's my favorite one. I know Rome would write an article saying anemic as well. Like Michael said, putrid. Bill Kelly said offensive, which is kind of funny.
Inept.
Because, I mean, it was offensive, but it wasn't offensive, if that makes any sense. Alien, that's a bad word. Jeremy Booth, in one he combined words, says Alvarez is hitting second again because he hates that. Darkness. Non-existent, that's two words. You failed the task. Invisible, said somebody. Lost. I mean, miserable, expected, unsupportive, inconsistent, inevitable, imaginary, intermittent, putrid, pathetic, brutal, stagnant, bad word, pressing, yips,
non-existent,
missing, terrible, deceased, non-existent. I mean, it's there's all of these superlatives, or opposite of superlatives, are the Houston Astros offense right now.
I think I used anemic a couple weeks ago. I didn't want to use it again, because that was when during the Red Sox series when they were really bad. But my goodness, this was worse. This was just, it was literally, it was downright pathetic. It was like 4A. Mm-hmm. It was just looking like you were facing Cy Young Award winners every time someone else took the bump for the Angels, because you looked like you just couldn't put anything together, let alone put bat to baseball.
Post All-Star break, I stole this from Marks on Twitter. The Astros post All-Star break are 29th in runs, 20th in batting average, 21st in on base, 26th in slugging, 24th in home runs, 3rd in grounding into double plays. I mean, the offense has been bad, and it's coming whenever you've gotten Yordan back, and Yordan's been better than what we, like, our expectations of him. Because, like, hey, temper expectations, he hasn't played in forever, 100 games, like, you've got to ease him back in. He's been really good, and the Astros around him have been awful offensively.
Yeah, it's just it's and again, it's one of those unpredictable, how in the hell are they two games ahead in first place type elements to the season, when it seems like the roller coaster has been, when the pitching's been good, the offense has been bad. When the offense has been good, the pitching has been bad. And yet somehow they brother-in-law everything together to a point where, with all the numbers you just rattled off, you would think there's no way this team is in first place, let alone by multiple games. But yet here we are.
Yeah, well, I mean, the division's been a pillow race, like a pillow fight. I mean,
yeah, because
like,
Seattle's been awful too.
Correct. So I mean, it's the I think it's more of a tell of the division than anything else. But the Astros do find themselves in first place. How about the Astros going 3-3 in the six games versus the Angels and the Rockies this last week? Y'all thought I was nuts whenever I said, give me 4-2. I said, give me 4-2. Oh, no, that's not lofty enough. No, 4-2 would have been great. 4-2 would have been fantastic because they were 3-3 against the Rockies and the Angels.
Yeah, brutal. It's just, you don't want to say it's, because again, another one of the elements of this roller coaster season is, you do really well against the first place teams, and you absolutely struggle mightily against every team that is close to being a cellar dweller or a really less than team, and you make them feel really good about themselves when they get done playing you, and that's what you've seen so far in this homestand. And those were winnable games. The games in this series were winnable, that they were attainable. They were right there until the bitter end, including Saturday night, and then they just fumbled it away.
All right, hit me with your next one.
Next one to me was the Lance McCullers Jr. Just, I mean, for one inning, if you know, we look at him, he didn't want to go to the pen at all. But I think that the happy medium was, hey, we'll piggyback you with somebody else. You'll get multiple innings still. There's a chance for you to stay somewhat stretched out. You can do what you need to do. First inning, fantastic. Second inning, holy goodness, what's going to be the next injury, excuse, or discussion about Lance McCullers Jr.?
Maybe he's just a one inning guy.
It's possible. And because again, in that inning, that first inning, he didn't have to use it much, but the fastball looked like he could actually get a major league hitter out. And in the second inning, when he wasn't hitting people or walking people, Trout hit the fastball on a laser beam off the left center field wall.
Yeah. No, he wasn't good in that second inning. I'm sure the first inning was also smoke and mirrors. When you say Lance was, I guess, reluctant to go to the pen, you're talking about before the year?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think you have to give him credit for being able, like, willing to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of commend him for doing that. For I don't know if
but
it was his idea.
Did he have a choice, really?
Well, I mean, he could have said no, yeah. I mean, he could be like, I refuse. I'm going to be a diva about it. No, you're not doing that to me. He could have done that.
And then he could have been a free man.
Sure. But he still gets paid.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that would have been best case scenario for the Astros. Really.
I don't disagree. So,
yeah, I give him credit for moving to the bullpen. That's really all you can say about that, though, because he has been pretty awful at everything else. I think you can throw Abreu into the mix as well. Abreu on Saturday.
He was on my list, yep.
And I think a lot of that was kind of like he kind of got a bunch of seeing eye singles early, but then the extra base hits came up late, couldn't get out of the inning. Broke up 12 scoreless outings from Brian Abreu. So the greatness that was Brian Abreu for the last month went all awry on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm not going to worry about Brian Abreu. It was a hiccup. It was unfortunate. And because of the fact that they couldn't put any offense together, even the ball that ended up being extra base hits, it was catchable. You probably should have given up one there.
But
you gave up more than that because Cam didn't catch it. So it happens, right? It happens to the best of them, and he is one of the best of them. And unfortunately, it happened to you at a time when the perfect storm against you happened on all in one game. And, he was on that was on my list as well because it was – I thought watching the Seattle game kind of back and forth, I thought, well, Seattle just lost. That's fantastic. You got a chance to gain a game, and instead you screwed up.
All right, any other ones you have?
That was about it.
Brian, any other ones you have?
I mean, you guys obviously talked about a lot of them. Brian Abreu, LMJ were top of my list. And then you said the offense overall, but like specifically, like Correa was 1-for-11, Yiner was 1-for-11, Walker was 0-for-7 on Saturday and Sunday. I mean, the offense as a whole, but some of the guys, especially with Correa and Walker that you're paying, you hope a little bit get a little bit more from those guys.
You're not paying 100% of Correa though. You're not paying 100% of Correa. You're getting how much are they paying? How much do they get off on that? They got
phrasing.
No, that's if you're going to be a pervert, you'd be a pervert. I'm not going to adjust who I am.
He was due to make what 20?
No, it was like 33.
33?
I think they're kept what, they 8 knocked... million of it. So 816, maybe 25% they kept, something like that. I don't remember.
They knocked 10 or
yeah, I don't remember.
But I thought the annual salary went down to about 23.
Okay, well, was at 33. So maybe it was a third.
Maybe
they ate a third of his money. That so sounds... I mean, if they're getting a third of his money, you can only expect two thirds of Cray offensively. That's how
so
it works.
So two thirds right? equals one for 11?
That's how it works. Now, that one hit was important. The one hit
was
the clutch
go
hit.
Ahead run, yeah.
Because, and he has good at bats. Like, all these other dudes are flailing away, swinging first pitch and, like, popping it up on the infield. Yiner Diaz was up with the bases loaded, nobody out, and hits, like, a ground ball to third base. Steps on third, gets the dude at the plate, out of the inning completely. So, like...
His
it's hard
bats
for me
are
to be,
definitely more competitive than the other two I mentioned for
no,
sure.
I mean, you're right. I'm just kind of like, you know, which one is the tallest little kid, you know? That's kind of what I'm looking
the
at.
The salvageable were what? Pena was 3 for 12. Alvarez was 3 for 10 and didn't see a whole lot of pitches. And Altuve was 3 for 12.
Yeah. And Yonder's like, Jordan's on base since he's come back like 500.
Yeah. A lot of walks.
So, I mean, yeah, Jordan was, I think, on base 5 times over the weekend.
Yeah,
so
a lot of walks.
He's doing his job.
Maybe the offense will explode-ish today against a former love. But we'll see. We'll see. The offense hasn't been very good. Jordan coming into today's game, and they play at 305 or 605, of course. 286 batting average coming into today's game with a 500 on base. A 500 slug. His OPS coming in today's game, since coming back, six games, is 1,000 on the nose. He's so good. Jordan is so good.
He is. And you can see, we saw the respect he's gotten from both in both series from the fact that they don't want to pitch to him. Colorado absolutely basically was telling every pitcher, don't even let him see anything he can hit. Mm-hmm. But even in this series, they've been doing their best to pitch around him. He is a factor even when he's not actually swinging and making contact because of the fear he puts in the other team.
Everybody's arguing about where he should bat in the order, second or fourth. And, like, I prefer fourth. I'm fine with two. Like, I really don't care about batting orders a whole lot. I think they're grossly overrated. The problem is it doesn't matter where he's batting if nobody else that's mm-hmm. batting behind him is doing anything. Like, if he's batting fourth and you have Walker behind him and Sanchez behind him and they're not coming through whenever there's runners on base, well, they're never going to pitch to him. If he's batting second and Altuve's doing nothing and Correa's won for his last 11 and they're not doing anything with runners on base, they're not going to pitch to him. So you just – I mean, all of you can fight about Jordan batting second, Jordan batting fourth, when the reality of the situation is it doesn't matter because they're not going to pitch to him in a critical moment because nobody behind him, whether he's hitting second or fourth, is doing a darn thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's unfortunate. But, you know, you look at it and say the only time he might see good pitches is if there's bases loaded in a one-run game and they have to pitch to him. Because other than that, no. Why would you? If you know that the rest of the lineup is putrid, then why would you?
I wouldn't pitch him in that situation. Like I'm throwing a pitch. Like obviously, I'm not intentionally walking
like
him.
You're opening chases?
Almost. Yeah, I'm not throwing him a strike. Like, I'll nibble, and if he wants to get himself out, cool. But I'm not throwing anything over the plate. No chance. Correa, one for, what did you say?
One for 11. Yeah.
Christian Walker behind? No. Somebody else is beating me. Jordan's not beating me. And you know what's going to magnify this? If the Astros are in the playoffs, postseason baseball.
Yeah.
Like the Angels are playing for nothing, right? Yeah, they're fighting and you know they're maybe going to win the series and they're playing hard for their interim manager. But you get into a playoff series and you expect Jordan to get pitches to hit? No chance. And you know what worries me a little bit is that Jordan, because the offense has been anemic, putrid, lifeless, whatever, starts to chase at bad pitches. Mm. So like start to come around, guys. Start to come around. The wake-up call needs to happen. It needs to happen. It's September.
The Walker thing's so weird because he can look so good, and he had a really good month last month for the most part, but when you watch him in some of the games in this series, he just looks overmatched by a lot of fastballs still, and it's puzzling.
Yeah, he's his bat speed's there, though. I just don't know if he's a great hitter, maybe just a good hitter. They got off to a bad start. We covered here with the bads and the uglies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the ugly was just the injury itself.
The
Ward injury itself was ugly. Just the fact that he was bleeding and they had to come out of the bullpen with a towel.
Yeah. Who's the most famous cut man in boxing history?
What's his name? Is it Ferdy Pacheco, the fight doctor?
Whoever it was, they needed to get that guy out there.
Mick from Rocky.
I was thinking Mickey from Rocky. Yeah.
Do you know how many stitches it took?
I heard it was 20, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 20 stitches.
Really?
20 stitches above the brow is what Julia said today.
That's normally where it splits.
He didn't land on the IL, and he said they expected him back in a couple of days. So I think he got lucky, but 20 stitches right above the brow. I mean, that is a dog, dude. He tried to finish the play, too, but he's like, the center fielder's there. So
and
I'm
he was the guy waving for the medical attention while he was hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
Well, you know, he's been hitting the face by a fastball before. Right.
And sneakily, he's got, what, 30 bombs?
He's pretty good.
He's having a pretty good year.
It's pretty good. Pretty good in Anaheim, where, you know, baseball, they don't care about baseball. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Eric the Driver says the offense unwatchable. Unwatchable? Why did I put an N in there? Unwatchable. Josh from Seabrook, the Astros are like the Steelers of the past few years. Good team, playing down to their competition. Israel says still two games up. Emoji. He used three of them. That's the good. I mean, that's the first good of the day. What are the goods that came from the Astro weekend? Plenty to get to. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk DeMeco leaving the Texans for Alabama. We don't think it's going to happen. But I saw some internet rumors out there. Not really rumors. Just kind of some conversation. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Football is back! It is back. Underdog is the place to make picks and win money all season long, too. If you're hearing this in Texas, you can play right now. Playing on Underdog is easy. Pick whether your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, yards, interceptions, and more. It's easy. Get your picks right. You can win up to 5,000 times your cash, and you can play with as little as $1. Today, you can actually get a Saquon Barkley free play. Will he be higher than 0 rushing yards? Of course he will. Take advantage of the free play on Underdog right now. Also, a 30% profit boost going on this moment. And of course, still some time to hammer out these best balls. You can find me in the lobbies. And with Underdog, you still have the originals. You have the ladders where you make 3 to 5 picks, progressively win more based on how well each pick performs. You still have the streaks. Each streak starts by making 2 picks. If both are correct, the next pick for the streak becomes available. So download the app right now and sign up with promo code KILLERB to score $50 in bonus funds when you play your first $5. Promo code KILLERB, KILLERB. Millions of fans have already won billions making picks on Underdog. You can be next. Underdog, make picks, win money.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Killer Bees, 713-780-ESPN, laboring on a Labor Day. Appreciate all the laborers out there, though. Put on for you. Alex says, BMAC, hit the sounder. Texas is back.
Texas is back, folks.
We'll get to college football a little bit later. But, yeah.
Arch is a bum.
Jeez. Already turning your back
spoiler
on Arch.
Alert. Oh, he was a bum Saturday.
None of it on Sark?
Huh?
None of it on Sark?
Oh, the tush push was garbage. But no, it doesn't matter what he calls if Arch can't hit a simple 5-yard crosser.
Yeah, we'll discuss in greater detail a little bit later. Texas, maybe they'll be back next week. Back to a 1-1 record. Who do they play next week?
Texas! It's folks.
Oh, really?
I think
UTSA
so.
Going A&M Texas right out of the gates?
It's, ooh, no, man. I'm sorry. It's UTEP. It's, okay. It's one of the Texas system schools.
I gotcha. Yeah, we'll discuss greater detail, some college football. Got to get to some college football later. It was great over the weekend, watching that all weekend long. All right, the good coming from the Astros. Is there any good to be had after the Astros lost 2 of 3 over the weekend? They're hoping to split the series with a win today.
I would say the starting pitching. I think that's where you have to start because you got really quality starts from Brown, Arrigetti, and Javier. Javier really looked great, didn't give up a hit in 6 innings, only gave up 3 walks, had 6 Ks. Arrigetti looked fantastic, only 1 hit in 6 1/3. And Brown, you know, deserved a win. It's 6 innings, 3 hits, gave up, made 1 mistake. So I would say those 3 alone and starting pitching is where you start.
Suddenly the starting pitching is looking pretty good, huh? Depending on what Luis Garcia does today. But if Garcia pitches well today, I mean, you're looking at Hunter, who's been dominant all year long and kind of, you know, maybe he's tracking to be top 3 AL Cy Young. I feel pretty confident saying that right now, which would give the Astros a draft pick. Fromber looked great with Cesar Salazar behind the plate last time he pitched. And I'm wondering who catches him tomorrow. I'm eagerly awaiting that lineup tomorrow to see who catches Fromber Valdez in the first game of the series against the Yankees. Because if it's Cesar Salazar, I might opposite of riot. Like, I'm gonna celebrate if Cesar Salazar is catching Framber Valdez tomorrow, but we'll see. You mentioned Javier. He looked fantastic. What was it, 6 no-hit innings? Mm-hmm. Like, it was vintage Christian Javier. Arrigetti. Like, Arrigetti pitched well 2 starts ago, but it was a weird start because he wasn't getting the whiffs. He wasn't getting the strikeouts that he normally does. So it's like, well, that's kind of weird. Maybe it's a step in the right direction, but who knows? And then all of a sudden, his last start over the weekend, the swing and miss is there. The strikeout was there. So Arrigetti looked fantastic. And, you know, maybe Christian Javier or, I mean, Luis Garcia will look good today. So now all of a sudden the rotation's looking like a strength. Now, small sample, recency bias, absolutely, but it's funny how the tables turn. And then if you still have Costanza, of course.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's the one positive you can take away unequivocally going forward with this team is the fact that you've got guys now that look like when they take the hill for you that they can give you, instead of hoping they could give you 4 or 5, which we were dealing with for a portion of the season, you got pretty much, they're going to go to a 6-man rotation, I think, until they get their next day off. But you got 5 guys right now that you could rattle off their names and say, I trust them.
Maybe 6.
So you got...
Do you trust Hunter?
Yeah.
Do you trust Framber?
Yep.
Agreed. Do you trust Costanza?
Yep.
Summer of George. Of course we trust him.
Yep. The Summer of
do
George!
Do you trust Javier?
Right now I do.
Javier's been pretty good other than that game where he was sick.
The puke game, yeah. Or the poopy game, whatever it is.
Yeah, TMI. Arrigetti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well...
Yeah, Luis Garcia.
I mean, we've only seen Luis Garcia once.
One this last outing, but
Arrigetti's last
walks.
2 starts. Yeah, 5 walks. He's always going to be. He's going to be a walk guy though. Like he's going to give 5, up his though? Walks. So is Javier. Javier's a walk guy.
Yeah, I would crush him if he walked 5.
I rather give up 5 walks than 5 hits.
No, well, 100%, but still can't walk 5.
Yeah, he needs to walk less. I agree. And then Garcia.
You doing a Ric Flair walk?
No, I'm doing the. I'm doing the cumbia.
Tell when you're trying to jazzercise in your seat.
Well, I'm not a good dancer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I guess if the Garcia question is kind of like TBD, not just because the game's at 6:05, but because of the fact that it's his first start back in the bigs, and it's the Angels. But, yeah, I mean, you would hope that because he was progressing in AAA that – he's got the stuff and the ability to be a guy you trust.
Yeah, like I wouldn't. I'm not going to go all in on Luis Garcia just yet, but it was very encouraging to see his start today or going to see his start today. So, yeah, the starting rotation looks pretty good. I think what else do you have?
Did you watch – we can get back to it later, but I didn't see the inning that he got touched up today. But other than that, I like the fact that he kind of has settled in on a delivery. His arm, his slot looks better. It looks like he's using his full extension, and it looks like he had command of his pitches, which to B-Mac's point, when we're talking about guys that are walking too much and losing control, no matter what kind of stuff they have, that was encouraging.
Yeah, I read Chandler's article last week where Luis Garcia's dropping the little shot put thing where he's getting more extension, which, you know, I'm not saying this can't be efficient, you know, the shot put thing, but it just didn't look good. Looked weird to me, but he dropped that and he's feeling more comfortable. So that's cool. What else do you have?
For the ugly?
No, the good.
Oh, the good? I mean, just the top 3 guys in the lineup were decent. I mean, that's what we were talking about. The fact, you know what? And some of the guys in the bullpen were good. I got to give a nod to guys like Ort, who was sucking it up and doing what he had to do. Okert, who did what he had to do. And I mean, the De Los Santos acquisition was something I was like, oh, he won't even pitch probably for the Astros, or it'll be just kind of like a bridge guy. And he's actually been better than serviceable.
Yeah, he's got his arm's pretty legit. He's got a big league arm. Now, he loaded the bases, nobody out, was able to get out of that jam. Mm-hmm. But, hey, he got out of the jam. Caleb Ort's been sneaky good recently. Like, we gave him a lot of grief, gave him a lot of grief for that extra inning loss, which, I mean, there's a man for man. But the bases were loaded, walks the guy. Actually, at second and third, walked back-to-back guys. But Caleb Ort has been sneaky good for like the last, 2 months. Let's see. You go back to July 1st. Caleb Ort since July 1st has a 2.49 ERA. In 21 2/3, wow, he has 25 strikeouts, just 13 walks. Like, Caleb Ort is turning into the pitcher we thought he had the potential of being at the start of the year. And I think he had the injury early, kind of derailed him a little bit, was slow to get back. But since July, Caleb Ort's been pretty stinking good.
I didn't realize it was that good. But
pretty
You look at it, aside from Kimbrel, it was the reverse of what we had been seeing lately, where Abreu was normally the guy that kind of carried everybody, even if there were hiccups. Instead, Abreu had the hiccup, and yet Ort, Okert, King, and De Los Santos were all really good for you.
Yeah. The my last good is that you still have a comfortable lead on the playoffs. Still a comfortable lead on the playoffs. And Fangraphs has the Astros like as an 89% chance to make the playoffs. Your lead right now on the playoffs is actually over the Rangers. The Rangers have jumped Kansas City.
Really?
They've won like six Kansas or seven City. In a row, I think.
They've won five in a row. They've won eight of their last 10 to
and that's
piggyback
without
off that.
Simeon. That's without, they're shutting it. They're just shutting
without,
guys down left
Nathan
and right.
Uvalde?
Yeah, Uvalde, Simeon. There's several guys out for them.
4.5 game lead for the Astros over the Rangers. Now, they do play again. The Astros and the Rangers do
this
play
weekend.
Again.
This weekend starts it. Yeah, they got two more series against them or just one?
So, best case scenario, you know, you take two or three there and you feel comfortable about your lead. Bad case, worst case scenario, all of a sudden that playoff leads down to, you know, minuscule number of games.
Yeah, I thought they played the Rangers twice more and the Mariners once more.
You might be right.
But regardless, you know, going in, you'd think, oh, they're wounded. They're basically mailing it in. And yet they're getting hot again, and they've got enough games against divisional opponents where they can make up a lot of ground.
They go at Texas this weekend, and they host the Rangers the 15th to the 17th. So six more games against Texas.
Yep.
Be nice if they would lose a couple of games. The standings watch, though, did you realize if the Astros won Saturday, they could have been within two of Toronto for the second spot in the American League?
I did not.
And they have three games against the Blue Jays next week. But then what do? They lose Saturday, get beat up on Sunday. Blue Jays won yesterday. So all of a sudden that, okay, it looks like you're on the cusp of a bye. It was gone. As soon as the moment popped up, it was get out of here. See you later. Like Harry Callis would
used
to say.
What did you say they were out of the second?
Out of here. They would have been too if they won Saturday.
But what?
MLB.com.
Well, I know I had it. I just shut it. I just thought you had mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, I don't know what they are currently. I know they're lead on the Rangers. What was your good, Brian?
You guys mentioned most of them, starting pitching, the guys from the bullpen. I'll throw in one additional name, though. He kind of had the exact same weekend line as Yordan. But Jesus Sanchez, 3 walks, 2 hits, had an RBI on Saturday. One of the few guys that was actually productive at the plate this weekend.
I like him. I like Jesus Sanchez. He's a baseball version of Jameis Winston, but I like him.
You see the mic'd up?
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
He was very entertaining.
He thought Chaz's name was Jacob.
Yeah.
I think he confused Chaz for Jake Myers. I really believe that.
Yeah.
I think he confused him.
Because he kept
all
pressing him. Like,
look alike.
I mean, it was a Ricky Henderson moment.
Yeah.
He kept pressing him. It's like, what's your real name? He's like, Chaz. He goes, no, really. Like, what's your real name? Like, you know, is it a longer name or what? And he just kept going and going. Chaz's like, no, it's Chaz.
But he thought his name was Jacob.
It was entertaining.
I am 90% sure that Jesus Sanchez thought Chaz McCormick was Jake Myers. I'm 90% sure. He's like, your full name's Jacob. Like, he thought it was Jake.
You're not turning Chaz into Jacob.
No.
You would turn Jake into Jacob.
He thought that was Jake Myers. 100%.
I'll go 95%.
You're going to hit 95% me. Yeah, I'm pretty confident. But, yeah, I like him. Any other goods? Do we cover it? Do we get it?
Yeah, I think
you got it good? All right, we got it good. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. We mentioned the Ward thing where he ran into the wall. The Astros are getting some criticism from some people about having a metal out-of-town scoreboard. Is the criticism of the Astros out-of-town scoreboard, is it fair? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something that's more than fair, in fact, it's great, is Walmart. Houston, the Walmart you thought you knew is now new. Did you know that Walmart has more than 500 million items online? That's right. You can find a huge selection that you can't even find at stores at Walmart.com. Branham family has been using Walmart for quite some time now. We used it over the weekend. Branham baby had a little bit of a fever. He's feeling fine. He's great now. But we got him all the stuff he needs at Walmart. Didn't even have to leave the house. We ordered it walmart.com, deliver it straight to our doorstep. It was there fast, and now Brandon baby's feeling better, probably because of Walmart. But we've been using it for a long time. We don't like to mess with the crowd. We don't have a ton of time. We don't want to turn the game off, at least I don't. So we order online with Walmart and get everything we need without leaving the house. It's fantastic. Oh, you're thinking it's expensive. Online grocery shopping costs more. You're a curmudgeon. That's not the case. It's not true at Walmart. Grocery prices are the same for delivery as they are in the store. And because it's Walmart, you know the prices are low. And what I love about it, I mentioned it, they're fast. Walmart can deliver in as fast as an hour. Going online at walmart.com, ordering the stuff we need, is faster than going to the grocery store and getting the stuff we need. They're going to save you time. Use express delivery to get all of the eligible things you need from Walmart, from the groceries to the home goods, even prescriptions at Walmart. Walmart's changing the game. So when it comes to feeding your family, taking care of your family, hosting a tailgate, throwing a party, think Walmart for all of those grocery needs. Start an order today at walmart.com.
around the Killer Bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Going to give away tickets to the ESPN 97.5 Listener Appreciation Party coming up on Friday.
A little party.
A little bit later. Cal may or may not be there. Waiting to hear back. But going to give away a pair of tickets a little bit later. So make sure you're locked and loaded to the Killer Bees. So yesterday, Taylor Ward ran into the left field wall. It busted up his brow, just above his left brow. Needed 20 stitches. Avoided the IL. And they're saying that he could even be back in a couple of days. Julian Morales said that today on the Astros Angels broadcast. And there have been some thoughts about this. Joe Adele, Angel center fielder, was not too pleased with the Astros left field scoreboard. Alden Gonzalez, who we've had on these very airwaves, he's been on with the Killer Bees in the past. Both of them did not love the Astros out-of-town scoreboard. Here was Joe Adele after the game yesterday. There should be no out-of-town metal scoreboard anywhere on the baseball field. It's the big leagues. This bad word is ridiculous. A guy goes back to make a play, and he's got to worry about a metal fence, question mark? That's crazy. Alden Gonzalez, writer, ESPN, field reporter as well. Feel terrible for Taylor Ward, who once took a fastball to the face and now had this happen. Also, the same organization that thought it'd be a good idea to put a hill in its outfield still has a metal out-of-town scoreboard in the field of play. Stupid. Taos Hill's catching strays because of what happened at the dike yesterday.
Surprised he didn't mention the flagpole, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, right? Like the hill? Yeah, I guess not. I guess they did omit it, which was a little bit weird. Weird, I'll go with. I liked Taos Hill. I like the flagpole in play. I like my baseball parks to have character and personality. I felt it gave it character and personality. But is the criticism of the Astros out-of-town scoreboard fair?
I don't think so. I think that you can go around the park, I mean, around Major League Baseball and look at all the different parks, and there's plenty that you can be critical of. I mean, you can take the old throwback stadiums like Fenway and Wrigley, where you're talking about brick and you're talking about metal and whatever the entire scoreboard, I mean, the wall, Fenway wall is made out of, but it's a hard material. But then you look at all the different parks that also still use brick to some degree. There's some in Camden Yards. There's some in PNC. There's steel girders in PNC that copy the bridge in the back. But the thing that is, there's a plenty of chain link, too. And the chain and the metal can hurt you if you hit your head on it. And also, oh, by the way, Aaron Judge at Dodger Stadium last year got all tangled up in the quirky metal and the pad and the framing of it and hurt his foot and all this other stuff. I think anything like this happens and someone's going to throw the red flag and then they're going to start pointing fingers and bitching. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous for the dike to catch strays whenever there's a bunch of parks that, and you mentioned all the ones that I was thinking of as well that have a lot of those very similar things. And Wrigley's been around since the beginning of time, I think. I think it was the sixth day was Wrigley Field. Same thing with Fenway. Like Fenway has, I think it's hard plastic now, used to be metal. I was reading up on it earlier today, but then they used like certain concrete stuff to patch up the wall. So like, I don't know how much of it's concrete, how much of it's hard plastic, who knows? But what the Astros have is not really that unique compared to hard surfaces around the game. I will say that it is kind of odd that there is so many hard surfaces in this sport because, yeah. Like, you look at football, and football has, like, obviously, none of the walls are in the field of play. They're always on the boundaries and stuff like that. All of those have to be padded. Like, yes. They have to be out of the way. So I think it's ridiculous that the dike is catching strays, but I will say, with one caveat, that I am surprised that hard surfaces in baseball still are very much in vogue whenever we talk about safety in 2025.
Yeah, let's skip the old aesthetics of the old school baseball park, and let's just talk about the brick walls. Because there's plenty of brick still in the outfield in ballparks in Major League Baseball. So I don't think you want to hear about it. Not just Wrigley. I mean, I think even the new Citi Field has some brick on it in the outfield. So there's plenty of parks that have hard surfaces on the outfield wall. If you just want to go with like your whole blanket philosophy about what you did when you put the netting up for the safety of fans, if you want to talk about the safety of players, then you're going to have to talk about padding every wall in every park, and you're going to lose a whole hell of a lot of revenue, too, because a lot of that chain link is where people sit in picnic tables and they sell tickets to sit behind the outfield wall to get that perspective.
It is very weird. Like, to me, taking a shot at the dike is it's ridiculous because of all the ballparks that have these weird things. If you're gonna have a take about this and a stance about this, I think it's more Major League Baseball allowing so many hard surfaces or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of where I stand on this. Like, should the dike have padded surfaces on every wall? Yes, but it's not really an Astros problem, as you guys have described. It's a Major League Baseball problem. To me, it's complete rinky-dink nonsense to have non-padded walls. I mean, just think of the NBA court having obstacles that you could run into. I mean, you could run into a cameraman, but think of a hard surface. I mean, same thing you mentioned in football. All those walls behind the end zones are padded. It should be a Major League Baseball rule to have the playing surface or the walls on the playing surface all padded to where players can't run into a metal or a brick surface.
Yeah.
It's insane, but it's more than an Astros problem. It's more Major League Baseball problem.
I mean, that's where the take should be.
Even then, when everything that we've said, we're talking about because he got a head injury. But like with the chain link thing, how many guys try to climb the wall, but when their spike, their metal spikes get stuck in that chain link and then you can twist an ankle too? Like, yeah, it's going to have to be uniform across the board. And you know they're never going to do that with Wrigley.
They should.
The thing with Wrigley that's ridiculous, too, is it's brick. And just because the ivy grows during the summer, that's supposed to give you some kind of a pad. No, it just loses some baseballs. But you're still hitting a brick wall if you go out there.
Yeah, that ivy doesn't do a whole lot.
No, at all.
I wouldn't even consider the ivy much of a pad either. I mean, it was a fluke. Like, this has never happened in the history of the dike. Like, I've never ever seen a left fielder go back and clip his eyebrow on the panel of the out of town scoreboard. This was a freak accident.
I literally, when I saw it, I thought that the lower signage before you get to the manual scoreboard, I thought that there was a lip there that looked like it was, and it's actually three stripes that kind of looked like it would shine, like there was a metal lip to it. And I was like, well, that would be a safety hazard where you need to put a pad on top of that lip. But then upon further review in the slow motion, like, as long as there's pad leading up to, and that's a flat surface, you know what the wall is. The outfielders plan on it. They play for it. They practice where it's going to be. You deal with it.
That is part of it. Like, you know, you wish Taylor Ward well, and it's very good that he's not seriously hurt. Like, there's a warning track. Like, you know that the wall's coming up. You know what the wall's made of. You know, maybe a little bit of awareness. I don't know. Your team's not that good. Why are you going?
Yeah, but then you're asking guys not to try to make plays.
Well, you have to be aware of the wall, though. Like, you don't want a dude running into the wall.
Look, and this is a Major League Baseball criticism, not an Astros criticism, as I said in my last comment. But that's why it should be uniformed across the league, that these surfaces should be padded. Because then a guy like Taylor Ward wouldn't have to be thinking about, oh, wait, is this a ballpark with a metal scoreboard or is it cushion? Like, he wouldn't have to have that having it in his mind. He just could go make the play.
But to Jeremy's point, every visiting team comes in and takes extensive practice to understand what the quirks and dimensions and character of a ballpark are, to understand the walls you can crash into and the walls you can't. The warning track tells you where you're at. I want to say the corner where that cutout or that indentation happens by the visiting bullpen, I want to say even that corner where he was right by that, I want to say the corner is actually padded.
I believe you're right, yeah.
But it's just the actual scoreboard itself that's not, that he ended up hitting. And again, it's one thing to say that you think it should be that across the board, it should be padded across the outfield. But from a revenue perspective, to some of the character elements like the manual scoreboards that have been that like they do in certain stadiums because it's been happening, especially in Fenway, since the beginning of baseball, I just think that's a tough call.
Yeah, I don't know how many ballparks are losing the revenue there. The dike wouldn't lose revenue.
There's no signage on it.
Fenway wouldn't lose revenue there.
But you would lose revenue for, like, there's Arlington, there's, I think, PNC. There's several stadiums in which they sell outfield seating behind a chain link fence in the outfield.
Yeah, those ballparks you would – I mean, they would just have to figure something else out.
And the Pirates aren't living on ticket revenue anyway, let's be honest.
I mean, they want the revenue, though. I mean,
sure. I'm not really worried about their ticket revenue as a part of the conversation.
Key from LA, as long as it's in a ballpark regulations, you should be able to do what you want with your own ballpark. That's mostly where I stand. Unless it was a league-wide rule, which it's not, I think that you should have jurisdiction to what you want to do with your ballpark. And I think it's ridiculous that the Dykes catching the strays whenever all these other ballparks have hard surfaces as well. Pretty ridiculous. Keith from L.A. mentioned that one. Starting pitching, three thumbs up, says Israel. Eric the Driver, hats off to y'all for doing labor on Labor Day. Way to stick it to the man. That's what we do. That's what we do. Killer Bees.
All right,
713-780-ESP. Let's get to what happened over college football this weekend. Arch Manning. How far did his stock plummet? We'll discuss that, all the other great stuff in college football that happened on Saturday, even yesterday as well. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
The winners, the losers, and all the best college football moments this weekend.
Here's Castellanos to the outside, inside the five, diving into that end zone.
Did you see it?
Goes deep, save.
Can you feel it? Do you believe now?
You believe now?
Of all the
you, hold on. Do you believe now?
With the Killer Bees.
I don't believe in Colorado's late game clock management. Let's start with Arch. Arch Manning. I thought he looked adopted. What did y'all think?
That's one way of putting it.
I want to see the birth certificate after that game.
You thought you looked overmatched?
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe Arch Manning against Ohio State? 713-780 ESPN.
One word or more?
However you want.
Okay.
Hopefully hurt.
Hurt?
I said hopefully.
Is there any legitimacy to that?
Well, people besides me, I saw this from buddies. I saw this online on Twitter mostly. But people kept noticing how often he was messing with his shoulder pads. And it looked like he was like trying to wiggle it, trying to get some feeling into it. I don't know. It doesn't make sense because he was still rifling every throw, which was part of his part of his problem. He was trying to laser beam every throw in, even if it was 5 yards away. But people seem to think that he might have been dealing with a shoulder injury.
You know what it was? He was wearing adult pads, and he's not used to the ones that are bigger than the kiddie pads. That's what it was.
He was so bad, man.
He was, for sure, the one college football player who draft stock plummeted the most.
Did you see what happened to his Heisman odds?
I didn't see his specifically, but I saw the updated odds. And look.
Before the game was even over.
One game isn't going to define Arch Manning's career. Like, we all know that. But for as one game goes, the guy who was the preseason Heisman favorite, the guy who, when these people put out these mock drafts, and I think Arch Manning's staying 2 years no matter what happened, they had him number one before a college football game was played. If there's the NFL draft today and Arch Manning's in it, I'm not sure he's a first rounder.
I think you're right. And I think that Paul Feinbaum took the biggest L of the entire weekend with the fact that he was promoting him up so greatly as the Heisman. He predicted he'd win the Heisman. But when you look at it, this was one of those games for him where he probably should have had a cupcake. It would have been ideal to have a cupcake or two before you played some serious competition, because all you really had were cupcakes in the past. He hasn't really played that much. And I thought that he was overmatched. The first thing I thought about was, thank God, whether it was an internal family decision or not, thank God he's going to have a couple years to work this out. Because right now, like you said, Jeremy, I don't think he would be a first-round pick. And I think that he has a ton to learn about playing football at this level, let alone on the next.
Look, I liked Ohio State in this game because I thought it was a terrible first real start for Arch Manning. Like, you're going into the shoe. You have 100,000 people. You have an NFL defensive coordinator. You have one of the best defenses in the country. Like, to me, the recipe didn't add up for Texas winning this game. And they almost stole it at the end. It just didn't add up for me. Like, 75 on the Twitch. Ohio State is a crazy good secondary, the best defensive coordinator money can buy. That's why I'm not closing the book, obviously, on Arch Manning. And I respect the opponent, and I respect Patricia, even though he almost ran over me once at a joint practice that the Texans had against the Lions. But Arch was missing easy throws. Like, Arch was missing throws that he should be making in his sleep. 3-5-yard drags. He's throwing off his back foot sidearm and throwing behind wide-open receivers. So it's greater than just Ohio State really good defensively. I understand that. I respect that. I'm obviously not closing the book on Arch Manning after one game, but what should be very easy throws for any college quarterback, even playing Ohio State, Arch was not making.
I mean, was he even dialed in at the Manning Passing Academy? Because, I mean, you would think that fundamentally he would learn some of the things that he didn't look like he knew. And I saw Sark catching a lot of heat for the plays, the play calling, and, like, you know, not being more prepared for the Ohio State defense. And it's like, just what you said. You can say that till you're blue in the face, but what through his progressions, he had guys open that he literally did not see, or when he did see them, he did not throw a catchable ball.
No.
There were so many times where the one specifically was in the fourth quarter, the little crosser to Ryan Wingo. There was one earlier in the game, very similar situation where they went for it on a fourth down, didn't get it. We're in field goal range, so that was points off the board, obviously. But it's just a little five-yard drag route. That's all it is. And he threw it behind. He threw high. The very first pass of the game, he had a tight end out in the flat wide open. He bounced it to him. He was just incredibly beyond belief erratic with his accuracy.
It was not pretty. It was ugly.
I mean, Sark deserves to catch heat, especially for the tush push. It was a horrible play call. But it doesn't matter what you call if the quarterback can't hit a drag route.
You think Sark's a good play caller?
Not in the red zone.
I saw this discourse online.
Yeah, Landry was all over. He has been for a couple years. I think some of the criticism is overblown, but specifically in the red zone, he's bad. I mean, we remember what happened last year against Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl with the toss sweep play. And this year, like, I mean, there were the fourth down play where Arch misfired to Ryan Wingo. He had the play design was Arch standing flat-footed in the pocket, not on the move, and just trying to, you know, accurately complete a ball. Now, Arch should have completed it, but from everything you've seen in the game, Arch needs to be on the move. There needs to be some sort of run-pass threat, an RPO of some kind. Let Arch use his athleticism. That's the only thing he had going for him. And then the tush push, I mean, if you don't have Jalen Hurts, please stop, guys.
Do you think that he's best throwing on the run?
I think he needs a run-pass threat.
Yeah.
Like, if he's flat-footed in the pocket, and at least right now, trying to dissect guys with just his arm, it's not going to happen.
He had an RPO in the first quarter. I think it was the first – it might have been the first or second series where they went for it on fourth down. It looked like an RPO to me.
Oh, and you talk – yeah, he should have –
he made a terrible read.
Yeah, he made a terrible read. John Harris called him all that, and he was 100% right.
He was wide open, the guy in the out of the backfield.
He kept it
open
for some reason when, like, if he pulled it and just – you know, just flipped it to the tight end and been easy first down.
Look, maybe, hopefully he turns it around and he's good and all that. And look, I think he's still going to be fine. I still think he's going to be good. Number one pick in the NFL draft in a year or two? I don't know about that. We'll see.
Work to do.
He's got a long way to go. And that's the problem, like, crowning these quarterbacks before they ever really played, is that, let's see. Let's see. And look, he did face a really good opponent. There's no doubt about that. 75, they lost 14-7. Stop acting like they got their butts handed to them like Alabama. We'll get to Alabama in a second.
Said that.
Yeah, we're Arch, just talking about Arch.
Arch Manning about Arch. And the Texas offense did get their butts handed to them. Like, I don't know how you could argue
the defense
that
was championship worthy. They gave up, 14 points on the road against obviously a team loaded with talent, and one of those touchdowns was on two penalties that gave the Ohio State an extra first down they didn't actually earn. So, and the other one was on a juggle catch. I mean, let's be honest, the Texas defense was great. Yeah. They lived up to the billing. Arch and Sark were just horrible.
The offense got their butts kicked. That's all we're saying. Texas, I think, ultimately is going to be okay.
Yeah, I do too. I just think that I didn't know what to expect it from Matt Patricia as a college D coordinator. Because, you know, he failed miserably as a head coach. But even that, as a defensive coordinator, Belichick was doing a lot while he was in New England. But, boy, he schemed up a lot that I think had Texas and Sark, like, scrambling no matter what. I thought he did a hell of a job.
Texter, Arch was so bad that he made me miss Ewers. Scary. Did you miss Quinn Ewers during that game,
Brian? Apologies to Quinn Ewers. I wanted to – in the past, I would put a lot of the blame on him. I'm starting to realize it wasn't him.
Israel says Arch is trash can emoji, trash can emoji, trash can emoji.
So far.
Is he wrong?
No. I mean, so far.
One game in.
So far, it's true.
Who's their backup?
I don't even know.
How bad would it have to get?
Oh, God. We're not. We're at least a month away from that, I think.
But they had to add, like, a five-star.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
I'm sure. I don't remember off the top of my head.
They probably added a five-star and then, like, a solid transfer quarterback to be the backup.
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head.
You don't know Texas' backup quarterback and you call yourself a Texas fan?
Because it wasn't supposed to matter. They had Arch.
He didn't go there.
I know.
He went to Texas Roadhouse University.
Alvin Community College.
Where's his burnt orange there?
Thank you.
That's do they wear burnt orange at Alvin Community College?
No. Oh, okay. The high school is like yellow and black, right?
They're yellow.
Because they're yellow jackets.
No. But I think they wear burnt orange.
Do they?
Maybe not. Maybe
for the yellow jackets?
Maybe I'm thinking Dobie. I don't know.
Yeah, Dobie or Dobie's the Longhorns.
Trey Owens is listed as Texas backup quarterback, according to our lads. Matthew Caldwell, Carly Lacey, Joe Tatum. Other quarterbacks.
I do not
there.
Know this man.
You don't know Trey Owens? Casual. You wouldn't know him because you're a casual.
No, I've heard Trey Owens' name. I've forgotten about him.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Those are thoughts on Arch. How about the rest of college football, though? How about LSU? They look good. Florida State look good. Who didn't? How about Alabama? Not looking great. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. You're going to look great if you get into a new vehicle at Monument Chevrolet. That's right. Monument Chevrolet is the dealer that you can trust. Transparent, no hassle pricing, and you get your car shopping done fast. Monument Chevrolet has been serving the Houston area for 50 years. Five decades. They've helped generations of families get into new vehicles, and these families just keep coming back because they trust the people at Monument Chevrolet. Family feel there, friendly atmosphere. They hire great people, which leads to a terrific culture. We love them there at Monument Chevrolet. So if you're looking for a new vehicle like the Silverado 1500, head over to Monument Chevrolet. Maybe it's the Blazer EV. You can join the 21st century. Buy a sleek, modern, comfortable electric SUV like the Blazer EV. If you're going to do that, do it at Monument Chevrolet. Or how about the stylish and economic Malibu? Monument Chevrolet is the place to get that. So get a fair deal, a fast deal, and an easy deal without wasting your time in these aggravating, stressful negotiations. No tricks, no time wasting, no hidden charges. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, now is the time to do it. Visit them online, monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com. Check out their entire inventory or go visit them in person, 225 at Beltway 8. Their lot is massive. They have streets on their lot, and those streets have street names. That's how large that lot is. So get on over there at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.